This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This week, there's a ton of movies opening. We're going to cover a smattering of them. We've got Maze Runner, The Scorch Trials, Black Mass, Grandma, Slow Learners, Queen of Earth, and Eden. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, the box office predictions, and of course, the world-famous DVD roundup. But first, this is how you can get in touch with me if you want to reach out. You can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies, as well as the Instagram handle fatguysatthemovies. And then finally, if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, you can find me at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Thank you, Ron Burgundy. Let's jump right into the news. The big news that kind of rocked the geek world this week was the fact that Pacific Rim 2, which is a sequel to Guillermo del Toro's modest hit from 2013, has been delayed. And the ostensive reason for that is to find a way to get the King Kong and Godzilla franchises of Legendary Pictures, which has all of those, to find out how to get those to work together. They want to basically build a franchise. This is the name of the game right now, is franchise building. It is not making a single movie and then waiting to do a sequel after that movie does well. Well, that's not how movies work nowadays. In fact, when you have a movie that has several years between the sequels or several years between installments of a franchise, that's when the franchises start to rot a little bit. It's what everybody's doing. It's the, let's make this our version of the Avengers. But a lot of people have said that this is probably going to be something where it's going to be canceled altogether, which it wouldn't surprise me if that happened. Now, I love Pacific Rim, but I also am not living in a fantasy. I realize that Pacific Rim was marginally accepted. It did okay in overall worldwide box office, but in America, it just didn't have wide audience appeal. And that's okay. You know, there are people who are so mad because the Transformer movies make tons and tons and tons of money, and those are terrible and stupid, but people still go see the movies. So just because something is quality and it's a good movie does not mean it's going to do well. And I think that's what happened with Pacific Rim. I mean, Pacific Rim had a couple problems with finding a way to find an American audience. It did okay overseas, and what really saved it was the Asian market. And there's a lot of question of whether or not a sequel would be a good reason, because those are expensive movies to make. And it sort of like goes back to the same argument when Guillermo del Toro was developing H.P. Lovecraft's In the Mountains of Madness. I'm like, I'd love to see that. I'm sure it'd be a fantastic movie, but you're asking for an R-rated movie that's going to cost $200 million that is probably not going to have wide mainstream appeal. I can understand why a studio wouldn't put money behind it. Guillermo del Toro says that Pacific Rim 2 is still on because he's got to deliver his budget and his script. But, you know, this doesn't look good for it. Another piece of news in terms of developing properties that have weak legs, Fox is quote-unquote figuring out a Fantastic Four sequel. And a lot of people are like, why are they trying to figure that out? It bombed. It did terrible. And you're right. Fantastic Four did not do well. And Fantastic Four was an embarrassment to Fox. It's about franchises now. And at this point, the question is, should you just develop another reboot, which seems sort of silly to have another reboot within 15 years? Two reboots within 15 years is kind of crazy. I think what they're just trying to say is, well, we're just going to redevelop these characters. And that's what they're trying to do. They're just trying to preserve the brand. The final piece of news, and I think I talked about recently, I can't remember whether I did. Alex Kingston, who geek fans are going to recognize as Riversong from Doctor Who, is coming back to the show for the Christmas episode. Now, a lot of people are kind of surprised. I knew it was going to happen. It has to happen, because the first time she meets the Doctor is when he's in his 10th reincarnation, which is David Tennant. And she says, "Your face keeps changing." And that's the only time she's ever seen any of the Doctors aside from Matt Smith's Doctor. Otherwise, she's only seen him as Matt Smith. And why should she say, "Your face keeps changing," as opposed to, "Your face has changed"? well, of course she's got to come out and show up again, partly because she's a beloved character and everyone loves her. And I think she'd be great with Peter Capaldi. I think that there's a dynamic there, and it gives Peter Capaldi something to be other than just the grumpy old man, which is kind of what he became. And we'll see how that works in this next season that starts this weekend. The other piece of Doctor Who news is Jenna Coleman, who plays Clara Oswald, who is his current companion, has said she's going to leave the show after she, of course, got another role in another series. You know, who knows? Because here's the thing. This is literally the third time there has been rumors that Jenna Coleman was going to leave. First time was when they switched doctors and they got Peter Capaldi. It seemed that she was not going to stay through the whole season, that she was just going to do a couple episodes and then exit the series, which makes sense because her storyline, the Impossible Girl storyline, had wrapped up. But they decided to keep her on. I'm assuming it was a contract negotiation. I would have done it too. I mean, after all, the only character in Doctor Who is not expendable is the Doctor. And even then, the actor playing the Doctor is always expendable because you can have the character regenerate. Jenna Coleman is completely expendable. She is no longer, there's no way to make her role any more critical to the Doctor Who universe than it already has been. But she ended up staying on through season 8. And then at the end of season 8, it was like, oh, I'm going to leave again. And there was all this talk. And then suddenly, oh, no, she's there, going to be there for the whole series 9. Right now, I think it's possible she might not leave because she's done this twice in the past. And I'm not attributing that to be her being flaky. I'm just saying that's just business. But I'd like to see Doctor Who go back to the old companions, where the companion was just the companion, was the audience surrogate, not the MacGuffin to the finale of the series. I mean, it's neat to have them very integral to the story, like Rose Tyler was, and the way Amy Pond was, and the way Clara Oswald was, but I'd like to just see the companion travel with them, and the travels don't ruin their lives, they just kind of stop traveling with them at a certain point. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. First one I want to hit is one that caused probably the most buzz this week, and it is The Jungle Book. This is, of course, Jon Favreau's live-action adaptation of Disney's classic film.
What are you doing so deep in the jungle? I'll keep you close. Let go of your fear now. And trust.
It looks cool. I mean, you can't see any of this because this is the radio, but obviously the effects look really cool. It's put away some of my fears that the animals would actually work, because there's this weird uncanny valley with animals that if they're too much like real animals, you can't make them talk, but they are going to have voices, and it looks like they're going to be preserving a lot of the original Jungle Book movie. I'm still not sold on Scarlett Johansson. That's who you heard as the snake. I mean, how do you beat Sterling Holloway? The problem is the voice cast of the original movie is so fantastic. They're such classic voices that it's going to be hard to replicate that with modern actors. Anyways, this one opens on April 16th. The next one I want to talk about opens a little sooner, and that is Our Brand is Crisis. This is David Gordon Green's new film, opens on October 30th.
It's a presidential campaign in South America. Fragile democracy, economy in real trouble. Our candidate is considered arrogant and out of touch with people's lives.
How far are you behind?
28 points.
The opposition has hired their own American, Pat Candy.
Jane Bodine.
Pat.
So what are you doing here? I thought you retired or gave up or something.
What happened to your hair?
So you still got a great sense of humor.
How many times have you gone against Candy?
3 or 4 times.
How many times has he beat you?
3 or 4 times.
David Gordon Green has this really kind of wonky track record. He's such an independent filmmaker, but he does some very weird stuff like The Sitter that just don't quite click with anybody. And then he has movies like Pineapple Express, which is a lot of fun and actually was probably his biggest hit that he's ever done. It's going for awards, obviously. It's going for Sandra Bullock to get an Oscar nomination. It's looking to Billy Bob Thornton to get an Oscar nomination. Anne Dowd. All these people have gotten awards and nominations in the past. It's trying to be maybe like Primary Colors, and it's also trying to spin a little bit off of the Argo feel, even though it's taking place in South America, not in the Middle East. It looks like it's got a really good cast, and it might be fun. It just depends on all the connective tissue and can it continue. And it might be a little too early in the political process for the 2016 run. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Black Mass and Queen of Earth. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies coming back to you, and let's start the movie reviews. First, I want to mention there's a couple movies that are out right now that I'm not actually going to talk about this week, and part of that is in September, for those who just aren't aware of the release schedule. In September, there's usually a ton of movies released. Earlier in September, they're usually mostly all bad. But as we start getting into mid-late September, and you see this kind of trickle through the rest of the year, there's a lot of movies that get smaller releases that either aren't screened or they don't play in a wide enough market to really warrant talking about, at least for me. I like to cover stuff that is either you can go out and see right now, or are things you might have missed, or little things that trickle through. In particular, Captive, which is a faith-based movie about a woman who is held captive by a guy trying to get home, and he's a bit of a fugitive. This one is just, I didn't get a chance to see. It kind of has a middling release. It's only in like 800 theaters. And it looks like it's got a good cast. I mean, Kate Mara's okay, but particularly David Oyelowo is a very good actor. He, of course, played Martin Luther King last year in Selma. So there's also Everest, which is opening this week, but only in IMAX. It tends to be the specialty release. And that's about the expedition in 1996 up Everest that was disastrous for some people. I didn't get a chance to see this one either, and it's because it wasn't screened widely. Maybe in the big cities, but also a Sicario, which is Denis Villeneuve's new film, starring Emily Blunt, but that's only like 6 theaters. So we'll talk about that at a later date. These movies are going to be around still. But those are the ones that should be on your radar, but I'm not covering this. This week, I'm going to be talking about Black Mass, though. That is really probably the one that's getting the most buzz. Johnny Depp stars in this gritty behind-the-scenes look at notorious gangster Jimmy Whitey Bulger and his alliance with the FBI.
In the beginning, Jim was a small-town player.
He's a very smart, disciplined man.
Take your shot,
but make it your best.
I can help you, Jimmy,
and you can help me.
It's an alliance.
Get the FBI to fight our wars,
and we do whatever we want to do.
For success. Just getting started.
The big reason to see this movie is for Johnny Depp and his performance. It's one of those transformative performances. He uses prosthetics and makeup and contact lenses to become this character, but he's very, very good at it. It reminds me a lot of his transformative performance as Hunter S. Thompson in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Now, as far as Depp's role, he's fantastic. I mean, he really, really commands the screen. He doesn't overdo it. It's a unique character, and it definitely is something that he can become, which is always what he gravitates towards. That's why he takes these characters that are kind of bigger than life, and at least with their tics and weirdness, and he definitely does latch onto that in this movie. So it's fantastic for him, and people are talking possible Oscar nomination. Middle of September is a little early to be talking about Oscars right now, because you still got a couple more months. You got 3.5 more months of movies. And there's only 5 Oscar nominations for Best Actor, so who knows what's coming up that's going to capture people's attention. But I would not be surprised if Johnny Depp is not forgotten throughout award season, even though the movie, I think it's going to do well, but not be huge. Mainly because there's some slow parts to it. The trailer's really good. It's got a great soundtrack, the trailer has. And I've seen this in movies, where the trailer really makes it pop. the movie doesn't quite pop like that. I think you get this look and you're like, oh, this is going to be another Goodfellas. Well, there was this frenetic, hyper-real energy to Goodfellas that is in the film, and that doesn't have it in this movie. This is a much slower burn. If you're going to say, if you're going to use a Martin Scorsese comparison, this is a little more like Casino in terms of it being a slower burn, a more deliberate movie. The other problem with this one is everybody else's accent's terrible. As great as Johnny Depp is in this movie, the other characters' Boston accents sometimes are just kind of silly. I mean, Joel Edgerton completely chews the scenery. It's still worth seeing. It's definitely a good movie. I did appreciate it, and I did enjoy it. And it's violent, and it's everything you'd expect from a gangster movie. It has all that to it. It's definitely rated R. And it shows something that happened in our history that is somewhat amazing. So the story is this gangster kind of getting protected by the FBI is unprecedented. And it's one of those movies where you're like, wow, I can't believe this was a real thing. So I'm going to have to say Black Mass kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Queen of Earth. After her relationship implodes and on the verge of a psychological breakdown, a woman and her best friend retreat to a secluded cabin.
Thanks for the exile.
That's what this place is here for.
From Alex Ross Perry, the acclaimed writer-director of Listen Up, Philip and The Color Wheel, comes an exploration of broken women.
See, Catherine is this great artist, but she's hiding in her father's shadow.
An imbalance that tears open psychic wounds and threatens to shake the very foundations of sanity.
I could murder you right now and no one would ever know.
This one is directed by Alex Ross Perry, who you heard in the trailer, was the guy who did Listen Up, Philip. And I think part of it is that trailer's odd because that's kind of tells what the movie's about, but it also shows it to be something that it really isn't. The narration, it's meant to be this sort of vintage return narration. First of all, I don't know how acclaimed Alex Ross Perry was for Listen Up, Philip. It wasn't great. I don't think it really made any sort of splash with anybody anywhere. So I found that kind of odd that they would choose to make a big deal out of it that way. You know, the trailer shows what he's trying to do. This movie is trying to be this psychological thriller. It's not. It's essentially two horrible people in a cabin, flashing back to last year in a cabin, fighting at each other, showing them at their worst. And you just wanting the entire cabin to disappear off the face of the earth because they're such awful people to deal with. I couldn't get into this movie because the characters, they're not just unlikable. They go out of their way to be unlikable. They're like mean to each other. And maybe that's sort of the point, is to show them at their worst. Every scene, they just happen to be at their worst in the day that that scene takes place. But Elizabeth Moss, yeah, she does a good job acting. And Catherine Waterston is okay in it, but they're just such awful people. It's trying to be this thriller. It's trying to be essentially a horror movie. And Alex Ross Perry has a great love of the 70s and these kind of movies. And I just recently saw Let's Scare Jessica to Death, which is a little more straightforward of a horror movie because it involves ghosts and vampires and stuff. I think that's what he's trying to go for. He's trying to go for that 70s feel of these psychological drains. And this one doesn't have anything other than just nastiness. It's a horror movie directed by a guy who has no idea what makes a horror movie a horror movie. And as a result, it's not really a horror movie. I used to do independent film, and there was a guy I worked with in independent film, and he was trying to get into everything. He wanted to build a media empire, and one of the things he wanted to do is he wanted to do a cooking TV show. But he had no idea how to cook. I mean, he was somebody who once, I was watching Rachel Ray and she's like, go get some flour. Who has flour? I'm like, everybody? Everybody has flour. I'm like, he was trying to make a cooking show and he didn't know how to cook at all. And he maybe read some things on the internet and read some recipes, but he has no background in cooking. You can't do a cooking show if you don't know anything about cooking. It will become an absolute mess. And that's what this feels like. It feels like Alex Ross Perry wants to make a horror movie, but he has no idea what elements to put in or how to make it. And I hated the character so much, I just wanted to leave. So, Queen of Earth sucks.
It sucks.
I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Maze Runner, The Scorch Trials, and Grandma.
Thank you.
There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys of the Movies, continuing with our movie reviews. Let's talk about the new film that's probably going to win the weekend, and that is Maze Runner, The Scorch Trials. After escaping the maze, the group of teens find themselves on the run in the desolate outside known as The Scorch.
It's only a matter of time before the flare virus wipes the rest of us out. This entire facility is designed to keep you safe.
Where are they taking her?
They're hiding something. These people are not who they say they are.
Thomas! What did you see?
We never escaped. It's wicked. It's all just been part of their plan.
Maybe they only have one question. Whose side are you on?
I remember back in the mid-2000s when it was clear that Warner Brothers was eventually going to wrap up the Harry Potter movies. I mean, when they started making the Harry Potter movies in, like, what, 1999 or 2000, it looked like they were going to go on forever because there were, like, seven books. The books weren't even written yet. And then by the time you got to about 2005, 2006, it became very clear to Hollywood that there was going to be no more Harry Potter. And they didn't know what to do because it had changed the way movies were. Between Harry Potter and The Lord of the Rings, these were franchise movies that were in a pipeline. And it was one of the first times they'd ever done that for stuff that huge. I mean, forget Marvel. This was the defining factor. They were having a movie come out every year or year and a half. And even though it all went to Warner Brothers, these other studios were trying to find the next big Harry Potter. And they tried so many of them. They tried stuff like Aragorn and The Seeker, The Dark is Rising, and City of Ember, and Inkheart. I mean, there were like a dozen bad attempts at the next Harry Potter movie. It finally clicked when Twilight was made, and that was the big one. And then people struggled to find the next Twilight, and it ended up being Hunger Games. Now, Hunger Games is coming to an end this year in November. And studios have been struggling to find the next big teen movie. And they think they found it with the Divergent series, but Divergent never really broke out like Hunger Games did. And The Maze Runner was the next one they were trying, and that came out last year, and it did well enough. It made like $32 million its first weekend, which is really good in September. And then it made like over $100 million with its run. But it didn't break out. It didn't become The Hunger Games. I mean, The Hunger Games is like $400 million a movie. They're still going with it. But the thing is with The Maze Runner, it is like Divergent, very, very dumb science fiction. And I apologize to anybody who's insulted by that. But The Maze Runner is dumb. It is written for kids, and they're trying to make it bigger than it really is. It's not good science fiction. It is full of holes, and it is full of nonsensical garbage. And I thought that with the first movie. It didn't make a whole lot of sense. So I went and saw Maze Runner, The Scorch Trials, thinking, well, maybe it's going to be better, because at least they're out of the maze. Because the whole thing is they're in this complex, and outside is the Scorch, and that is the scorched earth. And there's a virus that had wiped out humanity, and these kids are immune, and they think that the people in this compound are going to do something nefarious to them, so they have to escape. And once they do, they run into the people who are infected, and it kind of becomes this, I mean, overused, but neat little zombie movie. I'm like, wow, this is kind of interesting. I don't know if I totally liked it, but I was like, well, at least this looks, at least they're on the run from zombies. Can they keep this up for 2 hours and 9 minutes? And then that kind of ends, and the movie gets really stupid again. This movie only makes sense if you smack yourself in the face with a wet tuna every 10 minutes or so and jostle any sort of sense loose. Because it is the most consistently repetitive movie. There's a scene in the climax, I'm not going to say what happens, but in the climax, there's literally like within 2 or 3 minutes, there's something, somebody's going to say something and do something to somebody else, and then there's a noise off screen and everybody turns and something happens. And it happens like literally 3 times in just a couple minutes. It's not even a unique thing to itself within the movie. And it goes out of its way to not explain things. There's literally a scene where somebody's like, well, who's this guy? And they look at him and like, just get in the car. And I'm like, just say he's our leader or something like that. And it reminds me of there's a joke in Scary Movie 4 about War of the Worlds. And in the movie War of the Worlds, the one Steven Spielberg did with Tom Cruise, he comes running home and they're like, what happened? What after the aliens attack? And everyone's like, what happened? He's like, I can't explain. There's no time to explain. And then the whole thing is in that movie, he's in shock. In Scary Movie 4, he's like, there's no time to explain. And then somebody runs up to the door and goes, alien attack, and runs away. And he's like, well, I guess it was kind of easy to explain. And that's the way this movie is. It goes out of its way to not explain things, which is infuriating and stupid because you don't know what the motivation of the characters are. You still don't. And I even got up. I took my son to see this. And I get up and I walked out and I said, you know what? I've sat through two movies and I couldn't tell you why they were in this stupid maze to begin with. I mean, they're in the maze last movie and they get out of the maze and they basically say, well, you were in there for a test. We had you in there. And then when you find out why these people are so special, I remember thinking, well, why would you put them in a maze where they could get killed? They're way more valuable in a lab. It makes no sense. It's not very good. It runs way too long. Not a good movie. So ultimately, I don't know if this one's going to continue. It might just get that second movie, kind of like Percy Jackson. There was another attempt to make another Harry Potter franchise. But anyways, Maze Runner, The Scorched Trials sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Grandma. When her granddaughter shows up asking for help in getting an abortion, a broke woman travels around town to help her scrape together the money.
I need some help, Grandma.
Okay.
I need $600.
For what?
I'm pregnant.
You know, I cut my credit cards up into little pieces. I made a wind chime out of them.
Why would you do that? Why are you selling those books?
I need some cash.
I need $500.
You must not have a lot of friends.
And now you need me, and I'm broke.
Give us the money.
Get out of my home, you crazy old...
Oh, my...
You know, I liked your boyfriend. He's special. Really charismatic.
This is getting a lot of buzz, not for the content, but more for the performance of Lily Tomlin, who plays the grandmother. She's a lesbian in a relationship. Her wife had died. She's still reeling from that, and she's just broken up with her recent lover. And in this movie, she's got a real chip on her shoulder. And what's funny is this was the one I saw. It was like the third in a row of movies where the characters are kind of really just jerks. I mean, just like not nice people. They're acerbic and they're mean, and that makes for great acting. But I was just tired of that by the time I saw this movie because I'd seen Queen of Earth the day before. But I have to say that even though I was just tired of seeing people being jerks to each other, it's a well-made movie. It's very well acted. And it reminds me, and yeah, okay, yes, there's the abortion thing. If you don't like abortion, you're not going to like this movie, okay? If that's like your issue, then you're not going to like this because they approach it the way the movie Obvious Child did last year. And that's the one with Jenny Slate as a woman who is out to get an abortion, where they basically treat it as saying, look, this is a legal procedure and this is something that people do and you can go do it. And it's not there to judge. But even then, it doesn't debate the issue, which it doesn't need to. I mean, this is not an issue that's going to be solved by making a movie about it. But what it does is it reveals different people's attitudes towards it, regardless of their political background. And I'm not going to say too much because it could get a little spoilery, but it's a fantastic performance by Lily Tomlin, and it's a very down-to-earth movie, and that's really what it is. It's a character study, and it's about her, and her at the end of her life, and her views aren't going to change. But it's also just showing the repercussions of not being honest in your life, and where animosity can breed animosity, and with her relationship with her own daughter, which is the girl's mother. I mean, it's interesting and worth seeing, but like I said, you know, depending on where your political leanings are, there's going to be a giant roadblock to a lot of people in this movie. It's not meant to be, but it's good. It's a movie that's part of its setup. So kind of like Obvious Child, that you kind of have to either look past that or get around it, or you're just not going to like it. But I thought it was a well-made movie, and it's breezy and quick. I mean, it's like 75 minutes long. I don't know if Tomlin's going to get an Oscar nomination, because again, like I said earlier, it's a little early to be talking about that. But she's certainly going to be getting some Independent Spirit nominations and smaller nominations. So, you know, look for this performance as we move farther into award season. And I'm going to say Grandma kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I got two more films to review in the next one, Slow Learners and Eden, and then I'm going to be talking about the box office and the world-famous DVD Roundup. Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr rolling into its final segment. Got two more to talk about. The first one, though, is Slow Learners. Two dorky high school teachers decide to become cool over the summer to be better at dating.
I want to be a guy that no matter where they are, there's a possibility that he could have sex in a bathroom.
I want to be sex in the bathroom, people. That's so cool. How do we do this? How is this done?
Girls don't like guys from upper middle class Pennsylvania.
What do they like?
They want, like, bad boys. Have been in fights.
I guess I kind of have a slutty side.
You look really nice. I'm not used to seeing you with this much makeup.
Is the wine going to aggravate your IBS?
This is actually a very funny movie. I think had its original title was Bad Boys, Crazy Girls. I think that's what it played at Sundance. And it reminds me of those sort of independent romantic comedies where it's going to be R-rated, it's going to be crass, but it definitely is funny, and I actually like the characters in it. It was funny as this was in that string of movies I was talking about characters that are jerks. They become jerks. That's kind of their point. They're like, well, they're too nice. They're too passive. They're too dorky. They're not aggressive. So the two characters decide to try and harden up and be, you know, better at dating. And of course you can. It's a formula, really. If all you want is to just go out and have meaningless sex, man or woman, there's a formula you can follow and get that. It's actually not very hard. But again, it's a story about people becoming jerks and then having to redeem themselves from it. I saw it like literally right after I saw Queen of Earth. And so it made them seem like saints because Queen of Earth, the characters were so insipid and horrible. This one, it's cute. And it reminds me also a little bit of movies like last year, although it's not as much of a spoof as They Came Together was. But that one was the one by David Wayne is just kind of a lighthearted, silly comedy that feels like it's made for the mainstream market, but really isn't. This doesn't feel like an independent film, even though it is, because it is ultimately, you know, just a cute little romance. And sometimes that the romantic elements, the sort of the rom-com elements, get in the movie's way. We've seen this before. We've seen this in, essentially, it's a Pygmalion story, only it's not one person doing it to somebody else's, both the characters doing it to themselves simultaneously. So there is no Henry Higgins. They're both Henry Higgins and Eliza Doolittle all wrapped up into each character. Sex with Beautiful Women is a great idea, but this line where he says, and it's in the trailer, where he's like, I want to be the guy who at any minute could have sex in a bathroom. I want to go on record to state, I have never had sex in a public bathroom. That's just gross. And I know there are people that's like a fantasy of, and they, oh, that's cool. And you see it in movies all the time. I'm like, I don't like to go to the bathroom in public restrooms at bars. Why would I want to have sex in there? Ugh, it's just gross. I don't understand the fantasy behind that. Maybe I'm just an old fart because that's never been a fantasy of mine. But still, it's a cute little movie. It's fun. Slow Learners kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
The next one I want to talk about is Eden. A soccer team's plane crashes on a desert island and the survivors fight the elements and each other to stay alive.
I can hardly wait to get home.
Just relax.
Close your eyes.
Take a deep breath.
And take a nap.
I'll wake you up as soon as the plane hits the ground.
What do we do now?
Figure out how to survive.
we're talking about killing our friends.
We're running out of water.
I'm going across the second island. I'm taking whoever wants to come.
Don't do this. They're gonna come for us.
This one is on demand right now. You can get it on VOD through, I think, Amazon, iTunes, all the standard outlets. And it's a much smaller movie. It's not a big, well-known film. This is what I feared the TV show Lost would be like. I loved Lost as a TV show, but I didn't love Lost because it was about people on a desert island. I loved all the mystery of Lost. I loved all the questions about what happens, who's really behind this, what's really the nature of the island, you know, who are the others? And that's when I found it interesting. I mean, yeah, you got the human drama and the human struggle, but in Lost, I didn't care about just people fighting over fresh water on the beach. That's not interesting to me. Now, the press release compares this to Lord of the Flies, and I guess that's really what they're going for. The difference with Lord of the Flies is Lord of the Flies takes children and puts them in the situation. And it shows the nature of authority and struggle and all the niceties and the veneer of society and culture. And when you strip all that away, this is what you get. It doesn't work as well when you just put a bunch of people, you know, adults, because adults are adults. You know adults fall apart in situations like this. The other thing that bothers me about this movie is there's no organization to this. The whole thing is they're a soccer team and they're supposed to be getting along and they work as a team, but there's no team spirit at all when the chips are down and half their team's dead from a plane crash. It's a lofty goal, but it just turns into a lot of people fighting. And I just didn't like any of the characters. I thought the characters kind of all jerks. If that's what you want to see, is you want to see how realistically a small society can completely fall apart in the course of I don't know how long it takes, because it's like, I mean, people, they got like a week's growth of beard in the movie, and I'm like, well, how long did this take? I mean, you really fell apart fast. You didn't even last like a week. But if you want to see them fall apart and you want to see the human struggle, yeah, you're going to get that. I just wanted something more. Like I said, it's Lost without polar bears and teleporting islands and stuff like that. So I'm going to have to say Eden kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, I said that The Perfect Guy was going to make $18 million. I was a little bit off. It was $26 million. It actually did much better than I originally predicted, which was kind of on par with No Good Deed from last year. I mean, this is a platform release for this time, and it's not a movie that's going to... The only reason that that's really a great opening is because the movie costs like $10 million to make. If this movie costs $50 million to make, that would be a little bit more of a struggle. But since it's a cheap movie, same thing with The Visit. The Visit came in second with just over $25 million. And the reason that's a huge hit and a huge win for M. Night Shyamalan is because The Visit was only like $5 million to make. I mean, if you look at M. Night Shyamalan's record, The Visit opened with $25 million, which is a little bit less than After Earth opened, but the reason After Earth was such a flop was because that movie was way more than $5 million to make. Same thing with The Last Airbender. These tend to be very standard openings for M. Night Shyamalan. This week, I think that The Maze Runner is going to win. People are predicting as high as the mid-40s for this one. I think that's a load of horse manure. I think that The Maze Runner is going to make about what the first one did, right around $32 million. I just don't think there's a whole ton of excitement. And if you look at what happened with Divergent, it was mildly popular, but the return audience wasn't as strong. And this one just sort of maintains. It could do a franchise, but it could drop off fast. This one's not getting as good of reviews, and the newness factor is gone. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD roundup. A couple big ones out. Of course, Furious 7 is out this week on DVD and Blu-ray. And of course, there's, again, a box set of all the Fast and Furious movies up to now, which will become completely obsolete when the next Fast and Furious movie comes out. Cinderella, this is Disney's live-action adaptation of it, directed by Kenneth Branagh. And it's essentially the cartoon to it. It doesn't have the songs in it, but it's telling the same stories the cartoon does. And it's good for what it is. I mean, it's beautiful. It's lush. It's well made. And the audience responded well to it. If you didn't get the short film collection from Disney, you've got Frozen Fever in that one. Also from Disney is Disney Nature's Monkey Kingdom, which is a lot of fun. It's a cute movie. It's Disney Nature. It's sanitizing the natural world a little bit by not making it so terrifying. Because trust me, living in nature as an animal with predator and prey relationships and disease and danger is probably pretty freaking terrifying. It makes it a little more family friendly. I like the Disney nature stuff. They're not huge moneymakers, but now they're sort of focusing on individual animals. They had bears last year and they had African cats a couple of years ago. They had chimpanzee a couple of years ago. That one's nice to pick up for the family. Buzzard is an interesting movie about a guy who is just trying to get through life, just picking the remains of other people's lives. House of the Long Shadows, which is a classic horror film with like Vincent Price and Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing, is out on Blu-ray. One of the reasons it's important to get the Blu-rays because it's on Amazon. You can get it if you got Amazon Prime, but the transfer's terrible on that. And it stars Desi Arnaz Jr. I mean, who thought that Desi Arnaz Jr. was going to be a movie star? It's one of the lesser classic horror actors movies near the end of their careers. Well, I mean, near the end of like Vincent Price and Peter Cushing. I mean, Christopher Lee just died 20 years after this movie was made. And then The Legacy, speaking of classic horror movies, this one's released by Shout Factory. This is a great little movie. I never saw it. It was always on VHS and DVD shelves. That was always like my second choice. There's a whole bunch of movies that I just never see because we always found something else to watch. But it's a fantastic movie starring Catherine Ross and Sam Elliott. And it's what they met on and eventually became married. She's a woman who has been sort of picked by this satanic clan of the devil to be one of the possible heirs to this fortune. And it's a neat movie. It's great, slow burn, classic 70s horror. I really enjoyed it. Then a couple TV shows. You've got The Big Bang Theory Season 8, Sleepy Hollow Season 2, Empire Season 1, NCIS Season 12, and Lost in Space, the complete series on DVD and Blu-ray. That's it for this week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Hotel Transylvania 2, The Intern, and The Green Inferno. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.